Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Peace Talk. Peace Talk is a program that is sponsored by the Juneau chapter of Veterans for Peace, and it's part of the K2 series Focus on Community. We are on about once every month, with one or two exceptions, and normally on the third Monday. We're trying to figure out what to talk about tonight. And we had some ideas, and of course they always fall through at the last minute. But instead we had a meeting on Saturday of our chapter here in Juneau. And we discussed what to discuss. And two of my colleagues, Bill Dillon and Don Birdseye, agreed to come on and that we would just have a little discussion about the Iraq War, which concluded more or less last year, but which started 10 years ago this week when the United States invaded Iraq and in many ways is still occupying Iraq. We can probably aver, with not too much fear of contradictions, that there is not one goal that was expressed by the national administration when we sent our troops over the border into Iraq. Not one goal was met as a result of this incredible expenditure of blood and treasure. And we assume that most people are listening to radio and so forth and have probably heard all the statistics and the numbers. 4,500 American soldiers killed, about 2,000 more contractors, 5 million Iraqis displaced, and so on and so on. We might come back to that a little bit later. But I think for now, we'd like to just sort of talk about what was happening in the United States that made us so interested in trying to take out Saddam, which made us so gullible as to believe the lies that were coming out of the Bush administration and the CIA. What is it about our psyche as a nation that showed something like 85 or 90% approval for going to war in a foreign country that had absolutely nothing to do with a threat to the United States, and which in many ways we'd already been at war at since early 1991, because although we won that first Gulf War, we maintain a rather bellicose, the no-fly zones, mm-hmm. and the incredible embargo, which, when people were made aware of the fact that that cost the lives of estimated 500,000 Iraqi children, Secretary of State under Clinton said, well, that's just the price we have to pay. And I think many of us were confused then, and when the war approached, we were trying to adjust our psyches and our energies to try to interrupt that headlong rush to war. So I would like for either Don or Bill to just start talking. But I think we're all on the same page as far as the wisdom of it is concerned, but we're certainly not on the same page with the administration and the vast majority of Americans when we started it out, and who can explain that?
Well, 10 years ago tomorrow night, my wife and I were in Arizona, and my son had just flown in for spring break, and we were going to enjoy some time together. And President Bush comes on the TV and says, we're going to war with Iraq. And I knew before then that this wasn't going to be a good war. Before he declared war, there wasn't a Vets for Peace chapter in Juneau. But I participated in a peace march from a Fred Meyers to the St. Paul Catholic Church. And then there was a subsequent one that crossed the Douglas Bridge. And we knew this wasn't going to be a good war. When we started meeting as a chapter, once the war began, and we were wondering what to do for our first 4th of July parade theme, we talked about the idea, because they hadn't been found yet, doing a skit on searching for weapons of mass destruction. That's what George Tenet told the Bush administration everybody would buy in on. And we did to a degree. And we decided not to do that because we probably would have discovered weapons of mass destruction by the 4th of July. Turns out that weapons of mass destruction have never been discovered. And where do you go from there?
Well, I have, in doing a little bit of research today, came across a George Tenet quote. He made an admission in his own 2007 memoir. There was never a serious debate that I know of within the administration about the imminence of the Iraqi threat, nor was there ever a significant discussion about the possibility of containing Iraq without an invasion. I know as we were leading up to the war, I was living on a sailboat in the Caribbean and therefore frequently talked to people who were not U.S. citizens, a variety of sailboat people and other people in the Caribbean and the northeast corner of South America. And I recall sending email after email after email to the president and to my representatives saying, don't break international law, don't violate the Geneva Convention. I don't see how we can invade a foreign country that's not actually a threat to us.
And yet we did. And it was debated. And the Congress passed the AUMF, the authorization for the use of military forces, and began one of the most bloody conflicts in modern history. We don't want to talk about numbers, but the people of Iraq are going to be paying for this hubris for many, many years to come. The entire countryside of Iraq is polluted with depleted uranium from the shells that we used. The cancer rates in Fallujah are about five times what they are in normal pre-war conditions. And, of course, there's a tremendous human price to pay for both civilians as well as the troops. But I'm curious why. I mean, we're certainly not the only group that objected to this, but it seemed that the anti-war forces, in spite of that march across the bridge, that was a day of in February of 2003, when it was the biggest anti-war demonstration on the planet. Mm-hmm. I mean, in Sydney, in Amsterdam, in London, in Dublin, in Moscow, everywhere, there were citizens of goodwill and caring.
And New York.
And New York City, and Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. and Chicago. Yeah, I mean, it was everywhere. And there was spontaneous, huge demonstrations against this war. And
in Juneau, Alaska, there was 1,500 people who walked across the Douglas Bridge.
That's right. And we were totally ignored. Our United States senator voted in favor of the AUMF, the authorization for the use of military force. I believe our congressman did, although it doesn't matter what he does. I mean, just as a little aside here, I've concluded that anybody who keeps on reelecting Don Young doesn't deserve much from a state. Probably shouldn't have said that, but that's the way I feel. So anyway, we're now looking back. And if we look back before Iraq, if we look back before the first Iraq, we come to the fact that it's now 40 years since we abandoned Vietnam, since we pulled our forces out of there. The Alaska legislature has just passed a bill and sent it to the governor, who I'm sure will sign it, that declares March 29th as Vietnam Veterans Day. The word on Vietnam was that we only lost the war in Vietnam because of the pusillanimity of the politicians in Washington, that we could have bombed them back to the Stone Age. Well, as it turned out, we killed about 1.5 million of them, lost over 50,000 of our own troops, and a tragic waste. And it's interesting to me that when George H.W. Bush amassed the troops on the border between Kuwait and Iraq in January of 1991, and he sent them out, and we bombed Baghdad, and we invaded that country, and we killed all kinds of troops, 400,000, I think, was the estimate I've seen, that Bush was so proud of that because he said we had cured the Iraq syndrome. In other words, we had muscled up and proven that we're no longer afraid to throw our weight around. And one of the people that objected most strongly to that invasion in 1991 was the late Bishop of Juneau, Bishop Kenny, after whom the downtown Peace Park is named. Bishop Kenny said, if we invade Iraq now, or Kuwait to get them out of Kuwait, and push them back into their across their border, he says, we are going to pay the price for decades to come. And we have been. So what happened that turned us from a war-weary country that really did not want to try to throw our weight around after Vietnam to make us so militaristic by 1991 and later in 2003 when we invaded Iraq for the second time? Have any thoughts on that, Bill?
Well, regarding the first invasion of Iraq, when that happened, it appeared to me that Bush, as president, went to extensive ends to cajole a few other nations into being part of it. That wouldn't have happened had he not done that. And he was, in my opinion, looking for the cover of it being a joint venture and not just us. On the second Iraq war, I think, I suppose one way to frame it is it was, we had PTSD from 9/11. I think 9/11 was the primary reason that the entire nation could be generated. You said something like 90% or so, to respond. Unfortunately, because as is clear to anyone, dozens of nations have had terrorist attacks, and none of them except us have responded with a perennial war against an ideology. So, I think that's what happened. The shock of 9/11 created a situation where we could be easily led and were led in that direction. That's how I've made sense of it.
Is it because we were scared?
Why don't we play that track right now, Phil? Okay.
We have this evening a copy of the CD, Wounded Dove. And this is the one that was recorded by Vets for Peace in 2005 and 2006. It's almost all local musicians playing almost all recently composed songs by Alaska musicians. And the first song is Scared by Will Putnam. Let's listen to it.
That war, now we're going back, I'm not sure what for. Something about germs and chemical gas, nuclear bombs that'll blow our ass right out of the oil field, out of the patch. Knock us back to a meet our match and a bunch of kooks that took some planes, put some buildings up in flames. Makes me feel funny, makes me feel strange. For better or worse, things are gonna change. I'm just sitting here living my life while Bush has got us on the road to strife. I know Saddam's not a very nice guy. I know he's prone to cheat and lie and gas and bomb and kill and such. Still I wonder, do I ask too much to wonder how are we in this mess? Pressed, I guess, I gotta confess, I drive the car that burns the gas. I help to buy the weapons of mass destruction and death and flames and war. Sit on the couch and wonder what it's for. Thank you.
So what did we prove by invading Iraq? And remember, of course, that we invaded Iraq when we were simultaneously fully committed to occupying Afghanistan, which hasn't worked in many centuries. And foreign invaders, I think the first one that we're aware of who was repelled by the Afghans was Alexander the Great. So right before us, there were the Russians. And there was a lot of talk about a pipeline. I guess they're still talking about that because it's got to go through Afghanistan to go through Pakistan. And anyway, I'm wondering what the or it's got to go through Pakistan to go to. It's got to go through Afghanistan to go through Pakistan to get to the Indian Ocean so that there is a market for all that oil up there in Kazakhstan. So, would that have anything to do with it? Or do you really think it was a function of being scared, a function of being feeling a need to feel good about ourselves after an incredible shock of 9/11? What do you guys think?
I think it's a hangover from Vietnam. We had no reason to feel good about ourselves after Vietnam. That was certainly no victory.
Mm-hmm.
We managed to invade Grenada and Panama in the Reagan years. But everybody knew that didn't really count. We got to show off our smart bombs during the Gulf War in 91. But then September 11th came down, and we didn't know what the hell to do. except declare war on Iraq. It'd be a good time to play Pat Henry's Bread.
Okay. Yes, let's do that. Bread by Pat Henry. Now listen carefully to the lyrics.
We couldn't find you in Aruba with all the tears that we wept, but it kept our minds away from the war and a $1 trillion debt.
We'll play Bread after this, which is a Buddy Tabor song called Natalie Holloway.
As the war went on, we started looking for heroes. And we couldn't find one in Pat Tillman, and we couldn't find one in, what's the name of the girl?
The girl, right.
Jessica.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah, right.
So we had to get America's attention off our failures, and here comes Natalie Holloway to divert everybody's attention.
We couldn't find you in Aruba with all the tears that we wept, but it kept our minds away from the war and a $1 trillion debt. You were just a lonely high school girl about to spread her wings. When the facts ain't fair and balanced, the truth don't mean a thing. The day you came up missing, they sent the crews without delay, but they never mentioned Abramoff or the fall of Tom DeLay, or how Jack went to the White House over 200 times. And all the bribes and money that went down is bound to boggle up your mind. When the news is turned and you speak like in 1984, when you wake up in this nightmare with George Orwell at your door, when the facts are all distorted and the truth becomes a lie, and the tears fall down like napalm from freedom's bloodshot eyes. Dearest darling Natalie Holloway, I wonder if you have seen all those flag-draped soldiers' coffin coming from that nightmare dream, or the tears falling down on a mother's distressed face, or the hole in her heart from the son she can't replace. I wonder if your parents mind that your tragic death was used to cover up the truth and never broadcast the real news. Stick the lies into your face that's bound to blind both of your eyes. While over in the war zone, 50,000 souls have died. When the news is turned and you speak like in 1984, when you wake up in this nightmare with George Orwell at your door, when the facts are all distorted and the truth becomes a lie, and the tears fall down like napalm from freedom's bloodshot eyes. Yes, the tears fall down like napalm from freedom's bloodshot eyes.
Buddy Tabor, the late, great, and deeply lamented Buddy Tabor.
Heck of a song, wasn't it?
Amazing song. Maybe we ought to just play the rest of this album and let people draw their own conclusions. But one thing I wanted to explore briefly is, was the country much moved, or were we much moved by the Kosovo incursion, where we didn't lose one troop, but we bombed the hell out of the former Yugoslavia? Did we feel good about that?
I suspect that came closer to what I've heard the term used, humanitarian war of aggression. I suspect we were collectively as a culture maintaining we were doing it to save lives. Bit of a catch in my voice when I try to say those kind of words because they don't go together too well. Regarding Iraq, though, my primary concern, my primary interest in the 2008 election, that there be some kind of accountability happening, was that we got ourselves into a situation, and I don't see that we have any way of prevent doing it again at this point. What's to stop the same thing from happening?
Well, we have Iran just sitting there. Iran, which was significantly strengthened, by the way, by the debacle we left behind in Iraq. And we're beginning to hear pretty much the same things, aren't we? Iran has nukes, or they're within a year of having nukes. Of course, that was first propounded by Benjamin Netanyahu in 1991, when he said that Iran would have nukes by 1993. But, you know, I wonder if we're not being set up in the same way for yet another incursion in an undeclared, illegal, immoral, international trashing of another people in another culture.
That certainly is my concern, that we'll get ourselves backed into a war with Iran and maintain that it wasn't our fault and we had to.
And we already have imposed a brutal sanctions regime on Iran, and their children are now dying because the medicines aren't getting in there, the foods are not getting in there. So we need to double our efforts, I guess. And we can't and don't dare call it humanitarian intervention. It has frequently the outcomes that Pat talks about in his song Bread, which I strongly urge you listen to pretty carefully. So let's play Bread from this album right now and see what that provides us insight to.
Missiles at you with a big bomb in the nose. You ain't seen no fireworks, baby, till you set off one of those.
drop smart bombs right at you with a laser gun. Those we will guide them up your ass. We will guide them up your nose. We'll keep bombing you all night till our planes run out of gas. Then they'll go back for a refill, and when morning comes at last, we'll drop bread. We'll drop bread. We'll drop bread on your head, on your head, on your head, on your head. We'll drop bread. You should be grateful for the food, you know you should. You should be grateful for the food, you know it's good. You should be grateful for the bread. Unless, of course, you're dead. When we drop bread. There'll be billions for your defense. There'll be billions for your pockets. We'll drop bread. We'll drop bread. We'll drop big bread. Big bread. Big bread. On your bread. You should be grateful for the food, you know you should. You should be grateful for the food, you know it's good. You should be grateful for the bread. Unless, of course, you're dead. When we drop bread.
Pat Henry singing his composition, Bread. And brings to mind a number of images, and I just, let's talk a bit about what we did locally here. Don, you've got a good recollection for that, because by the second 4th of July after the invasion, we knew that there were no weapons of mass destruction, and the slaughter was just dumber than ever. And we had several other events going on trying to keep people's attention focused on the atrocities.
Yes, we did. We started going down to Marine Park in the summertime, and conducting a demonstration for an hour on Wednesdays. We had a number of end the war rallies around the March the 19th, 20th, beginning of the Iraq War over at Marine Park. I can remember a March 20th when it snowed 24 inches.
Uh-huh. I remember that too.
we produced a play what I heard about Iraq in 2006. In 2006, we also put out the Wounded Dove album. What else went on locally, Bill?
Well, I was thinking we started Peace Talk in, I think, 2007.
Yeah.
When K2 expanded to three stations and left a little bit more room for local programming. And I didn't think at the time that we would get a sort of a regular gig out of it that wouldn't ever go away. But here we are, some 5 years later, still on the air on the third Monday and reminiscing about the steps we took to try to intervene in the war. We marched hand in hand, too, with Juno People for Peace and Justice, which were very active in the efforts to slow this thing down. They would bring in speakers. They marched with us on the 4th of July. And I remember one time they brought in Senator Murkowski, who went to a full house, I think, at the Centennial Hall Ballroom and listened to people have their say about what was happening. And she assured us that she thought that we were all patriots, that she didn't doubt our loyalty, but that we were wrong. And then she left. So it wasn't all that satisfying, but at least she was listening.
Well, because of the media, so things come up out of the Iraq situation that none of us thought we would ever be confronting. What comes to mind is Guantanamo, or seeing our president and vice president debating the acceptability of torture, debating renditioning. A lot of things come up that would make us, me, question our moral integrity in the way we engaged in that, and the fact we were not even in a just war. So it's not surprising that there would have been a lot of stir-up. In retrospect, it now appears like that has been quietly, lightly painted over and hardly mentioned. Although I assume Guantanamo is going to be for the next four generations.
It is pretty amazing.
Doesn't want to go away.
Guantanamo is still there. It's still open. We still have several hundred prisoners there. And I guess more and more hunger strikes as time goes on. People have been held without trial, without charges. And you wonder, what was the 2008 election all about? I think a lot of people felt that there would be accountability from the Bush administration, that there would be investigations into torture, there would be sort of a disavowal of the types of things you mentioned, but
instead we got drones.
Yeah, instead we got drones. Well, we had drones, but we perfected them. And we had war activity conducted by the CIA. You just wonder where this is going to end. I mean, we become more barbarous as time goes on. We planted a huge embassy in Baghdad, an embassy that cost over $750 million to build. It's the size of Vatican City, with a complex of 14 or 18 buildings. Reminds me of the old Crusader castles, that when the Europeans were in the Crusades in the 13th, 14th, 12th centuries, they would build up monstrous buildings to house their civilization and from which they could defend and deploy their forces. I wonder what that's all about and where that's going to go in the future of Iraq. I don't know.
Well, it does strike me that with the fall of the Berlin Wall, we that changed where to even focus the extent to which we're going to try to influence things internationally, and we stumbled for quite a while. And
we could have had such a peace dividend out of that.
Indeed, we were sitting there on the plate saying, take it. That's not the way things have gone, and it would scare me now to have children who were of age to go to war. As it happens, my children are all too old for that now.
Ray McGovern is a gentleman who actually came to Juneau once, I think, very, very early on, and we find out he is a veteran for peace himself. He's a retired intelligence analyst. He used to brief the president during the daily briefings. And he said on Peace Talk, I got a chance to interview him, that by invading Iraq, the United States committed the gravest of international illegal activities. And, you know, invading a country without provocation and with no proximate reason for doing so was absolutely inexcusable. And he is somewhat of a scholar and a man whose word should count. And but I'm not sure who learned that message.
Well, that was my stance from the start of the second Iraq War, and I'm not somewhat of a scholar, but I couldn't work out how what we were doing could be justified, so. and still haven't, uh-huh. And I wonder the difficulty of not holding it was a policy failure among other things, and of not being held accountable for that makes it more able to happen again. That the reason I wanted the accountability is it would have likely set a wall against that kind of thing happening again. But it didn't.
Let's play another song. It's getting depressing here.
Michael Truax, there's some depression.
Okay, well, go ahead and introduce it, Don. You know these songs better than I do.
Well, actually,
it's called Pretty Good Day.
A Pretty Good Day so far.
I slept through the night, I got through to the dawn. I hit the switch and the light came on. I got out of bed and put some clothes on. It's a pretty good day so far. I turned on the tap, there was cold, there was hot. I grabbed my coat to go to the shop. I stepped outside and I didn't get shot. It's a pretty good day so far. I didn't hear any sirens or explosions. No mortars coming in with those heavy guns. No Humvee tanks. I didn't see one. It's a pretty good day so far. No snipers in windows taking a peek. Nobody running panicked and scared through the street. I didn't see any bodies without arms, legs, or feet. It's a pretty good day. There was plasma and bandages and electricity. Food, wood, and water. And the air was smoke-free. No camera crews from Fox TV. No Geraldo. was all such a wonderful sight to behold. Nobody was frightened, wounded, or cold. The children seemed normal. They didn't look old. It's a pretty good day. By 5 o'clock, I'd had enough. I finished my coffee and put away the cup. I started my car and it didn't blow up. It's a pretty good day so far. I slept through the night, I got through to the dawn. I got out of bed and put some clothes on. I wrote down my dream and I made it this song. It's a pretty good day so far.
Pretty good day, Mike Truax. I'm wondering if we agree when we get up and do the things that Mike sang about. We consider that to be a pretty good day when we know what's going on around the world in our name. Is there an explanation that we can find peace somehow, just even internally? Bill, go ahead. You look like you want to say something.
Well, it's finding peace would certainly have to start internally. What I was going to say is I've been wondering for a while now, some months, the extent to which we've become more and more militarily aggressive in the world in the last 15 years or so. Does that have an impact on our culture in a way that we now find the increase in bullying in schools across the country, and that bullying has become a standard concern in most communities? Does the concept of being aggressive leak into the culture in such a way so that it unintentionally affirms bullying? I'm not sure if that's accurate, but it's been on my mind that in some ways our foreign policy models what we're concerned about and going on in schools. We're inclined to engage in wars of aggression where we aren't threatened. Preemptive strike, as we all know, directly violates the Geneva Convention. Don't know where it's all going that way, so... And at the same time, I'm aware for me it's a pretty good day so far. My life is so blessed, and I'm never in any danger of being attacked or blown up or go hungry or whatever. So, although I admit to feeling relatively helpless sometimes in terms of influencing things, I'm sure I'm not alone there.
Right. What do you think, Dan?
I came here to talk about Iraq. Okay. I didn't come here to talk about bullying in school.
Okay.
I came here because in 2004, my nephew went to Fallujah. He was a combat photographer. He was there for Fallujah 1, Fallujah 2, our Ramadi in between. He lost his best friend, William Salazar, another Marine combat photographer. That's what I'm here to talk about. Mm-hmm. Screw it. They didn't go to Iraq because they were bullies. They went to Iraq out of a census service, and the bullying is done by George Bush and Dick Cheney and that whole crowd. We're not going to pin this on bullying in school has been with us since probably public schools began in the United States. There may be an increase, maybe not, I don't know. Bullying was pretty bad in the 1960s when I was in high school. Iraq didn't make us bullies.
Well,
Iraq is about a bunch of fine young men and women who served, and many gave their utmost, and it was all for a stupid war we should have never been involved in.
I don't, not only don't question that, I fully agree with it and don't think any soldier ever went to Iraq to bully. My bullying connection is we had a foreign policy precipitated by the Bush administration and Cheney that was a bullying foreign policy stance, certainly not our soldiers.
Well, what about those soldiers? Many of them are now back. There's over 1 million Americans that have served. There are close to 100,000 casualties, people who are going to be paying the price for this war for decades with their infirmities and the other issues that result from that type of service. There are 22 suicides a day from military veterans.
Mm-hmm.
There's something in the neighborhood of 19,000 sexual assaults estimated in the military every year. And Don is quite right. I mean,
Iraq doesn't have anything to do with those either, necessarily. Sexual assaults happen on posts in the United States and on posts in Japan and on posts in Germany. And as well as, no doubt, posts in Afghanistan. Every wrong in the world, you can't pin on Iraq.
Well, okay, I agree. We're not trying to pin it. We're just trying to figure out how to avoid Iraqs in the future. And we need to think about the potential consequences.
And
I don't know what the answer to that is.
I know a Brown University study that I looked at today, thinking of coming here, said that 25 to 33% of all troops deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan have depression or PTSD. So it makes us wonder, what are we doing to our children and to what end?
Well, are the troops, many of them are home, they're healthy, they've reintegrated back into their communities, they've gotten back to their old jobs, and they are probably more than any other group of veterans returning from war hailed as heroes. And the theory being that, I guess, we weren't nice enough to the Vietnam vets when they returned, and so now we have yellow ribbons on cars and so forth. But, of course, they're not all heroes. There were bad things happened. Most of them originating probably in the command structure. But I wonder if we are ever going to get our national reputation back. What do you think, Don? I think that does have something to do with Iraq. It clearly, we've pissed off everybody in the world.
Are we ever going to get our national or our international reputation back after Iraq? Is that the question?
Yeah. That's
funny. Yeah, they're already begging. Everybody's begging for us to do more, be more. We're single-handedly holding back the Iranian missile, whatever you want to call this catastrophe. We have to be relied on. We're the strongest military power in the world, whether we like it or not. I know we spend way, 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 way too much on things military every year. But we're all the world's got, so we're constantly going to be relied on it, and our reputation is going to be what our reputation is, depending on how much money we'll spend on it. We can buy our reputation with arms and men and blood.
I'd like to bring this thing pretty much to a close now. There is a song, one more song, called Bring Me Home. It was written and performed by a member of Veterans for Peace, a gentleman named Bubba. And this is the last one on the list there, Bubba Cook, who came up with this song in 1966 and recorded it for 2006. Excuse me. Okay. Let's play it.
I'm a soldier in the army. I'm a good American. I gave my life to God and country. And I do it all again. Just a naive boy from Austin, thought that war was just a game. After my first day out in Baghdad, I could only hang my head in shame. Saw a little girl stranded in the street. A bullet took her down before I could reach my feet. Just bring me home. It's been 12 months since I got here. And I've seen things that no man should. I lost my best friend in Fallujah. And I'd trade places if I could. Left a wife and two young babies. His parents took it really hard.
I think we'll just go out on this song by Bubba Cook. He's a member of Veterans for Peace and a singer and a guitar player and a composer and a good guy. Now he's in the Fijis, yeah. And now we have a time to say thank you to our two guests this evening, Don Birdseye and Bill Dillon, and to say thank you to John Kramers for being the magician at the board and keeping us on the air. So let's just fade back up to Bubba's song, and we'll take it out on that score. And when you're thinking about all these things, and even the conflicts, sometimes differences of opinions, you need to think also that foremost and our biggest commitment should always be to wage peace.
I can't close my eyes, I can't dream. It's been 4 days since I slept. I can't get these horrible scenes out of my mind. In the darkness last night, I just...
Graham was made possible in part by a grant from Organic Valley Family of Farms, organic and farmer-owned since 1988. Learn more at organicvalley.com.
Welcome to The Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature.
But sisters and brothers, there's a light at the crossroads.